Dude, how long have you been standing there?
An hour.
An hour?
Are you serious?
I've mastered the ability of standing so incredibly still that I've become invisible to the eye. Watch.
You're eating a Zargnut.
But my movement was so slow that it's imperceptible.
No.
I'm sure I'm invisible.
Hi, Drax.
And welcome to the Fanboy Garage. I'm Chris Lasanti, joined, as always, by my co-host, the man who took on the God of Thunder last night and lost, Aaron Varola.
What's going on, y'all? Southern. Yeah, what's going on? So interesting development. I mean, we typically record our shows on Tuesday nights, but in New York, we've had an incredible heat wave, which was then, I don't want to say concluded because we're still having it, but I'd say complemented by an amazing thunderstorm with amazing lightning, and it knocked the power out of my entire neighborhood last night, so I couldn't record. So here we are on a Wednesday, recording, giving you guys the good stuff, a day later, but to you, you're still getting the show on Thursday, so here we are.
Yeah, that storm was the worst kind of storm, because it was not only was it violent and disruptive, but it did nothing for the heat. So
no,
yeah,
no. Still hot as balls.
Yeah. So all right. So let's start off with a couple of announcements. So the first thing is we have a winner of our first contest that we announced last show for digital copies of The Last Jedi and Black Panther. And Aaron, why don't you announce the winner for that?
Drum roll, please. The winner of the very first The Fanboy Garage giveaway is Mr. Tavo Borrego.
All right. So, Tavo, yeah, you'll be getting a DM from The Fanboy Garage sometime in the next couple of days with the details on how you'll be able to redeem those digital copy. So congratulations to you. And I love the fact that you come with your own drum roll. That's pretty sweet.
You like that?
Yeah. All inclusive.
Yeah. It is, man.
Yeah. So now the second big announcement is something we teased on Twitter, I guess a couple of days ago now. That is, we will be having our second contest. And this contest is going to be, we're going to actually have two winners. One digital copy of the DC animated Death of Superman, and one digital copy of Deadpool 2. And to enter, you're basically just going to have to do the same thing you did the last time. You go to thefanboygarage.com, you go down to the Contact the Show button, click it, send us an email. In the email, in the subject line, you're going to put Contest Death of Superman or Contest Deadpool. And that will be an entry for you to win one of those movies. Now, how do you win potentially both movies? Well, if you get multiple entries, which you can do if you've left us a 5-star review on iTunes, or if you've purchased something from our merch store, or if you follow the Fanboy Garage and Aaron and myself on Twitter, you'll be able to get additional entries, which will potentially allow you, if your name is pulled both times, to win both movies. So just go to thefanboygarage.com, contact the show, send us an email or two if you've done one of those other three things, and you'll be entered to win one or both of those digital copies of The Death of Superman or Deadpool 2. So good luck to everybody, and we will be announcing the winner on our next show, or the winners on our next show.
Yeah, this is one that's super exciting because, you know, as we realized, a lot of people seem to already have Black Panther and The Last Jedi, but these movies just dropped. So if you're looking for some free stuff, we're not asking much. Just leave us a review, and we'll hopefully you'll hopefully be a winner, and then you'll get either or buy some merch, put on that hot gear, look fresh to death, and you'll have some content hopefully if you win. So very excited. Hope you guys participate, and we look forward to your responses.
Yeah. So let's get into it because we actually have a couple things to talk about this week. And we're going to start off with, I guess, a conversation that was inspired by Ron Diesel, one of our great listeners, who asked us about, you know, our thoughts on Batista's threatening, I guess, to leave Guardians of the, or asking to be released from his contract for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 if Marvel does not use James Gunn's original script for the movie. And then he followed it up by saying, like, how do we think other studios will look at him, you know, considering that stance that he's taken. So this is obviously a really topical question right now, and it got even more topical today as, you know, there was a rumor that they weren't going to be using the script, and then there was another story that came out and said, no, wait, they still are going to use the script. So I think it's still kind of up in the air right now.
Yeah.
But as far as my thoughts on it, you know, if he wants to take a stand, you know, good for him. I mean, most of the crew, most of the cast, rather, has actually come out in favor and support of James Gunn. He's clearly somebody that they, you know, they loved and held in very high regard. And he's been, I think, by far the most outspoken about it. You know, I don't see any real issue with it other than the fact that, you know, he does have a contract and, you know, it isn't always a good look to be asked, you know, to be released from a contract. Although, you know, this is kind of a legitimate thing. So I don't really have a big issue with, you know, him taking the stance. The one thing I do disagree with that I was reading about from his perspective, though, is, you know, this idea that, and we haven't really spoken much about the James Gunn thing, but, you know, this idea that, you know, this was nothing but, you know, something that some right-wing conspiracy nut, you know, decided to go at James Gunn just because of his political background. And that's the only reason why Disney fired him. It's right. Not exactly a correct narrative. I mean, yes, that was what began this whole thing. And while, you know, we don't really get political on this show, but, you know, while I'm not a fan at all of that person or, you know, his supporters that kind of, you know, brought this to the forefront, I mean, it's not the reason why James Gunn got fired from Disney, because this thing became very public and people were outspoken about it, and not just people on the right or on the alt-right or whatever. I mean, people like myself who were like, well, wait a minute, this was kind of disgusting. And it became a big deal at the moment. And you know, Disney being a, you know, a family-friendly company for the most part, you know, I think we both agreed at the time that it was a decision that they probably had to make. Whether you necessarily agree with it or not, we understand that it was something that they had to make.
Yeah, I mean, look, Disney has to protect the brand, right? And it has, I mean, it's like the biggest movie studio out there. So, you know, taking this hard line with James Gunn, you know, I think it's something that they unfortunately had to do to some degree. But, you know, as it's kind of stewed a bit and people have thought about it, and, you know, some people have made some really, really great examples, you know, even linking, you know, some of the behaviors and commentary that's come out of Disney itself from the past, you know, specifically Walt Disney, you know, the founder and sort of father of all things of the mouse. You know, it makes one think, you know, at what point do you, you know, can you really hold somebody accountable for things that they said in the past, like in a significant period of time, right? Because we're all not the same person we were 10 years ago, or, you know, there's certain things we thought were okay to do when we were younger that just don't fit our lifestyles today. So, you know, a lot of interesting commentary about it. And, you know, I personally, I'm to be honest, I haven't read anything that came out of James Gunn's mouth. You know, you just, all you have to say is pedophilia and rape, and I'm like, ugh.
Yeah.
You can't really joke. There's some things you can't joke about.
I mean, I'm,
you
know, somebody that loves comedy just as much as the next guy, but, you know, I just always believe that there's certain subjects. And look, I like blue comedy, and you know, I mean, I grew up in the Andrew Dice Clay age.
Yeah.
And, but still, like, you know, yeah, I mean, rape and pedophilia is not really...
I get it. You know, yeah. They're touchy subjects, but back then, who knows, you know, I mean, back then we weren't, not to get political, cause this is not the show that we're living, you know, that we're creating here. But, you know, I do think that there are a lot of sensitivities and people are hyper focused on, you know, content and commentary and all of that, more so than they were 10 years ago, right? So what may have been overlooked back then, despite its gross representation of a particular person, you know, looking for shock value or whatever, you know, through the lens of what we deal with today, there's definitely an you know, an exaggeration. I don't want to say exaggeration, but it's a hypersensitivity to that kind of stuff, right? That kind of commentary,
especially on Twitter, where, you know, it's become a big thing now to go and find tweets from people from years ago.
Fandom.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. So I think it's, you know, and roping this all back to Dave Bautista, like, I applaud him for taking that hard stance. He's like, I got my bros back. Like, that's what we're doing. And I applaud that, because he's quite literally putting his career on the line to make that statement.
Right.
And, you know, it's not every day that a former wrestler can work their way up to the heights that he has now. And there's still plenty more that he can do. He's certainly not at, you know, Dwayne The Rock Johnson's status, or John Cena for that matter, but he has carved out his own filmography that, you know, as the likes of Blade Runner 2049, you know, he's in a multi-billion-plus dollar franchise with Guardians of the Galaxy. He, you know, that role has expanded to the Avengers, which is, you know, ginormous in terms of box office pull. I'm trying to think what else he's been in. He's been in he's been in a lot of stuff. You know? I mean, the guy's been very, very busy. He's been Inspector.
He was in that
James Bond movie,
that awful Kickboxer Redemption,
which I did see.
Yeah,
that's pretty bad. But, yeah, you know, he was there. He played Tong Po.
Yep.
So, you know, it says a lot. It says a lot about the cast sort of backing James Gunn. And, you know, if I'm being completely honest, I don't know if I'm ready for a James Gunn-less Guardians of the Galaxy, because it is, you know, those movies have his DNA in it. You know what I mean?
And yes, they do.
His style and his approach to, you know, crafting that family and the sort of tonality of that film, those films were the first step in Marvel's sort of departure from that cookie cutter approach, in my opinion. You know, those movies to me are great. They've got some real, there's some really deep cutting, like, you know, thoughtful stuff that's being crafted there. And while, yeah, some of the jokes might undercut the ultimate payoff to those themes, they do resonate with me, and I do have a fond appreciation for those films. So thinking of, you know, them moving on without James Gunn is a little weird for me.
Yeah, I mean, and just to go back quickly to Bautista, you know, as far as, you know, what do I think other studios will, how they'll look at him for this? I don't really think they're going to look at it as any big deal. I mean, this isn't like, you know, creative differences in the sense that, you know, he didn't like the amount of screen time he was getting, and he, you know, pitched a fit or anything like that. I mean, this is, I think most people are going to understand that, you know, this is a legitimate reason. You know,
I mean,
and the rug was kind of pulled out from under them, you know?
Yeah. Look, what's his name? Mel Gibson. He's still out there. He's still acting.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah. I mean, look, people have,
I mean, people have done some worse things and or have made some really gross comments and are still out there. So, you know, I'm sure Dave will be fine.
Yeah,
he does have charisma. I know he is just really getting started, but there's a lot of potential in what, you know, what he'll end up doing. I mean, I just watched Blade Trinity again for like,
okay,
you know, first time in like a lot of, you know, a very, very, very long time.
On purpose,
totally forgot that Triple H was in that film. And it was probably one of his first and last films.
Yep.
And it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the other thing with Batista. He's in a little bit different position, too, than like your kind of typical like Hollywood actor. That's, you know, he already had a ton of money from his wrestling career. Like when he decided to do this, you know, he decided to get into acting because it was something that he wanted to do. And, you know, really, aside from Guardians of the Galaxy and the Marvel related stuff, like his film career it's not like he's, like you said, you know, full of blockbusters. But, you know, he did have money already, and he could, if he needed to, just go right back into wrestling. In fact, he almost did. There was here Tavo has been begging us to kind of talk about wrestling a little bit, so we'll give him a little tease here. You know, Batista was actually in talks to be the partner of Ronda Rousey at WrestleMania this year in the role that eventually wound up going to Kurt Angle. And it just didn't wind up working out. Like, they just couldn't make it work. So he was one of the options for that match. And, you know, so he could go back to WWE if he wanted to have one more big run. He's not a kid anymore, but, you know, he certainly could have one more big run in him. So it's not like he's absolutely, like, dependent on, you know, this film career to put food on his table. And, you know, he could continue to make small films, you know, like action movies and whatnot, and probably, right, you know, do perfectly fine because he's a name. You know, it doesn't look like we may have to worry too much about it because they may wind up using the script anyway. And, you know, all of the talk of what's going to happen with Batista might wind up being moot anyway.
Right, right. Yeah, so, you know, still in development, but it's an interesting story to follow in all of entertainment. And of course we would be foolish not to talk about it because I think we've been rough, sort of quiet on the matter. So,
yeah.
And we did get a question from one of our listeners. So thank you so much, Ron, Mr. Diesel.
Yeah. Now just to follow up though, a little bit on the James Gunn stuff, because as we're talking about, you know, what studios will think of people, the big question too is, you know, what's going to happen with James Gunn now? And the talk today has been that maybe Warner Brothers is interested in having James Gunn come over and direct a movie for them. And of course, a lot of the speculation is, well, hey, or the thought is, hey, why not Green Lantern Corps? You know,
yeah,
that's one of those options. Or the other thing I read too was that Marvel might actually consider bringing him back, but to direct something else, which actually doesn't make any sense to me.
That is really sure so bizarre. Why. It's almost like, yeah, we did this to you. We took your baby away. That's your punishment, but we'll give you something else to work on.
Not really sure why you would. It just, that's hypocritical. Now, it doesn't make any sense.
So if we were to speculate here, if there was any, I'm not going to talk about DC because there's lots. We've talked a lot about DC. But if there were a project that I would like to see James Gunn take on that's still affiliated with Marvel brand, it would be the Fantastic Four. I think he would do an amazing job with that. He does. It would kind of be a knockoff of Guardians of the Galaxy, just given that whole family dynamic, the dysfunctionality of it all. But I think he would do really well, and he's already shown us that he can play in the cosmic realm. So, hey, the Fox Disney thing is looking really good. You know, Bob Iger was talking about, you know, his excitement for the linking of the two brands. So, you know, not only I know we talked about this last episode, but not only, you know, would the X-Men be coming home, but so would the Fantastic Four and everything with it, including Silver Surfer, Galactus, all that good stuff. So, I think James Gunn would do well with that.
Yeah, I mean, although that would be, if I'm the cast of Guardians of the Galaxy and, you know, they bring somebody else in to direct Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, and then you turn around and then you hire James Gunn to direct the Fantastic Four, I'm saying, well, we might need to sit down and have a discussion. because that would be quite the interesting development.
Yeah, it also makes me wonder, like, where are their contracts at anyways?
There's that too, but...
So, yeah. Who knows? But you know, whatever it is, he's an amazing director. I'd certainly be excited to see, you know, what he comes up with for whatever franchise or movie he's working on. But, you know... Time will tell.
And I know a lot of people talk about, like, the Marvel formula, and I know that other movies now in a post Guardians of the Galaxy world, you know, like Thor Ragnarok, have kind of incorporated elements of Guardians of the Galaxy into it. But, you know, when Guardians of the Galaxy first came out, I mean, that was, except for Iron Man, right, which was the first, so it was the first everything. That was really the first, like, real creator driven Marvel movie, I thought. That was the first movie at that point that came out and really just stood out as being something completely fresh, completely different, and really had a lot of the director's kind of fingerprints all over it. A lot of which have now, like I said, become kind of part of the quote-unquote Marvel formula, if you believe
in such
a thing.
I agree, but I kind of don't agree with that because, you know, if you think about... You think about the tone of those films, right? And you know, the fingerprints of James Gunn, and just they're all over the place. Like, he you know, like I said, those movies, his DNA, they're intertwined, right? And the interesting thing about it is that when you watch Avengers Infinity War and you're first reintroduced to the Guardians of the Galaxy in that film, you feel the tone shift. You know, they're playing like, you know, 70s, 80s. Mostly 70s rock, and the humor is there, and it's just, you know, it feels different than the rest of the movie. And you know, I do agree that Thor Ragnarok was the sort of blend between the two, I guess, thematics. So, and I did, you know, I always felt that Thor was a well-written, funny character, but they just kind of upped the ante quite a bit, and he started playing a lot in that Guardians of the Galaxy type humor.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's always felt a little different, and I think that was the thing about the movie itself, the first Guardians of the Galaxy, right, Volume 1, is that, you know, up until that point, and that movie was released in 2014, you know, there was certainly a laying of foundations, right? Like from Iron Man, Iron Man 2, Incredible Hulk, all you know, so on and so forth. And you kind of, people were familiar with those characters. Like, everybody knows who the Hulk is. People were, I'd say, fairly familiar with Iron Man and Captain America for sure. Guardians of the Galaxy was some obscure comic I'd never heard of.
No, it was completely, it was like, wait, what?
I'm like, making, who are these people?
Like, I read comics and I don't know that. Like, a lot of people said Shree, that.
A talking raccoon, like, what? Yeah, I mean, I was familiar with, like, Nova Corps and all that stuff, but, you know, I would say it was Marvel's real risk.
Yes.
You know, there was a lot at stake in introducing these characters, and James Gunn, you know, did a phenomenal job at resetting the tone, creating his own theme, and letting those characters sort of breathe and live on their own, right? Because everything else is happening on Earth with some, obviously, some cosmic connections, but these people aren't even touching that stuff. You know, they're unaware of everything that's been happening. And it was that thread that kind of kept, you know, kept everything going, and we finally see that kind of close when they intersect with the Avengers. But, you know, it is you know, my daughter loves Groot, and it's just funny to me because there are certainly some really deep childlike aspects to the film, and again, there's that dysfunctional family at the core, and lots of humor, and it kind of set Chris Pratt up beautifully for his career. So, and you know, it's just I really enjoy those films, you know, and even for Zoe Saldana, who I remember was in, this is like a deep cut, was in the first Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Black Pearl, for a hot second, right? Like, she plays some swab mate or something like that. And I remember reading commentary about how she felt like she was just kind of like a wenchy chick, and she wasn't really feeling that. She always thought like her character was meant to be more, and you know, and that's essentially why she decided not to pursue the sequels of Pirates of the Caribbean. Good for her, because she is the embodiment of like the most feared woman in the galaxy as Gamora, and has done an amazing job at becoming, you know, a role model for young girls and boys alike, you know, in terms of her portrayal of that character. So, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy has done some really good stuff for people's careers and for the, you know, Marvel Cinematic Universe as a whole.
Yeah, well, that's what I meant when I say that, like, you know, people look, they talk about the Marvel formula and stuff. What I mean is, and I don't actually agree with them, in the sense that I feel like now so much focus of a lot of the fandom is put on the fact that, like, Marvel is this jokey, not as serious universe. And I guess what I meant was, you know, at the time, it wasn't like that, but Guardians of the Galaxy kind of is what created, I think, that vibe. It was the first of the Marvel movies. I mean, Thor had elements of it because of the fish out of water story that they were telling, but it wasn't, you know, a huge part of it. But Guardians of the Galaxy was the first movie that kind of blended in a lot of the humor and created that I think now people almost look towards the two Guardians movies, and because Ragnarok kind of followed that similar formula, and because they were incorporated into Infinity War, there's almost this, I think, exaggerated belief of like how much humor is in all of these Marvel movies. But at the time, we now forget, because I think we lose context, you know, as time goes by, that, you know, just how different Guardians was. And a lot of that was because of the creator. So now, you know, we're going to maybe have to see, you know, a new creator, although, you know, hopefully the script is intact, but a new director taking over this franchise and see what they can do with it. I'm sure they'll do fine because the template's already been set, you know, now by the third movie. But yeah, it is going to be interesting to see what goes on from there.
Yeah, I mean, that, you know, that's an interesting, you know, an interesting conversation there in terms of talking about the evolution of the Marvel footprint, right? So Iron Man had its quips and its jokes, and that was all driven by Robert Downey Jr., right? Like, the man is amazing at his one-liners and his ad-libs.
And those were also, though, befitting of the character.
Absolutely. Right?
Who was a kind of a wise-ass, you know, sarcastic, arrogant guy.
Right. And, you know, he gets blasted by missiles and whatever, and ends up with a shrapnel in his heart. And it becomes very real, because you're like, holy cow, this is happening in Afghanistan.
Right.
And,
yeah.
You know, I mean, it was some hard-hitting stuff. For sure, you know, it really brought the character into the times. And then, you know, fast forward to Incredible Hulk, and that wasn't really jokey. There were some elements there, but it wasn't like, you know, slap your knee type funny stuff. And you're absolutely right. I think Guardians of the Galaxy is what sort of cracked the mold a bit from that original Marvel formula. And, you know, I think the movies have since, you know, continue to push that envelope, you know, kind of culminating with Thor Ragnarok, because that movie is absolutely hilarious.
Yes.
But the interesting thing is that when you look at Avengers Infinity War, and I know this is a movie we've already talked about in our very, very first episode, but it just was recently released. If you look at Avengers Infinity War, the only time it really, really gets jokey is either with Iron Man and Peter Parker, right?
And that's more so in the beginning, yeah.
And Guardians of the Galaxy and Thor.
Right.
Everything else is very serious. So it makes me wonder, what kind of movies are we going to see after Avengers Infinity War? Is it going to be a bit more? Are they evolving again? Are they stepping away from that kind of slapstick, funny, slap your knee, whatever, and going back to some more of the, you know, sort of stakes and weighted vibe? You know,
yeah.
We'll have to see.
I mean, I think it'll depend on the character. Because, I mean, like, if you look at, like, Spider-Man Homecoming, I mean, there were, you know, fun moments in that as well, funny moments in that, but it wasn't, again, it wasn't, like, overly comedic.
It didn't cut its legs out from underneath it.
No, I mean, you had mainly, you know, the one character there that was sort of the comic relief, you know, the...
Oh, his buddy.
Yeah. Ned.
Ned.
Yeah, yes. You have Ned, who's the comic relief there. And but that, you know, it makes sense, again, in the context of the film. I mean, here's this kid who's like, well, wait, what's happening right now? Like, seriously? So, like, that's how almost anybody would react, like, if you were in that type of an environment. So it works. And just like it worked in Iron Man with that character, like, I don't have a problem with it if the comedy works. You know, the only time I ever really had a big issue with the comedy in Marvel was just the one brief moment, and I know Mario Francisco Robles talks about this a lot, was that moment in Doctor Strange where the big epic moment when he first steps out at, you know, in the with the cape, and then the cape like tickles him, and it was like,
yeah, like
really?
Wipes a tear from,
like,
his face.
Yeah, we didn't need that. Like, come on.
Yeah.
But
aside from that, I
have no problems with comedy in these movies. I like to go into a movie, and if you want to give me like a blockbuster movie like this, especially like a big holiday or summer movie, you know, make me laugh, give me some action, you know, and that's entertainment for me, man. So I have no problem with it, as long as it fits the characters and doesn't. I actually disagree. Where I disagree with a lot of other people who think that the comedy takes away was I actually think that both Guardians of the Galaxy movies, despite all of their comedy, actually do have a lot of emotional weight to them.
Absolutely.
And I mean, the opening of first Guardians is, I mean,
oh my God. Yeah. That, I mean, it's reminiscent to that Iron Man scene, you know, where he gets blasted back. And he's like, I'm dying. Like, holy shit, I'm dying. And I mean, it's a little different. I actually think there's a lot more weight to Guardians of the Galaxy in that opening scene because it's dealing with a mother who's dying of cancer and her child. And, you know, he doesn't have a father and him being abandoned and all that stuff like that. That's some heavy stuff.
Yeah. And it's not uncommon. You know, a lot of comedy comes from darkness. And it comes from dark places.
Sure.
And unfortunately, as we've seen with, you know, a number of like our great like stand-ups and comedic actors that like a Robin Williams, right, where things don't end well. Because a lot of that comes from pain, right? A lot of comedy comes from pain and anger and loss and just darkness. And so it makes sense that somebody who went through what, you know, he went through to almost use that comedy and use the jokes as a way to have to avoid.
It's a defense.
Yeah, as a defense mechanism. So to me, it always made complete sense for that. And, you know, I mean, and the stuff with Drax, and that's just his, that comedy comes naturally based on his personality and how he is. And he's not even trying to be funny, which is what makes that funny.
Dude, I was rewatching Infinity War for like the third time. Late last week, and I had to tweet out to Dave Bautista to say, dude, your comedic timing is like amazing. That whole scene where like Gamora and Peter are having this, you know, really, really intense scene,
it's
and
amazing.
He's like, you know, she's like, you need to promise you're gonna kill me, and then he kisses her and he turns around and Drax is there.
Yeah.
They're like, you've been here the whole time? He's like, yeah. He's like, I've mastered the art of being invisible.
Yeah. It's tremendous. It's like, it's, I think about that and laugh. It's so great.
Oh, yeah. And the thing is, too, and then you look at the second Guardians of the Galaxy. I remember laughing with, like, tears streaming down my face where you first meet Mantis and they're sitting by the campfire and she asks, oh, can I pet your puppy? And, you know, referring to Raccoon. And he's like, yes, you can. And she does. And he tries to bite, like Raccoon tries to bite her fingers off. And he just busts out laughing. And I'm like, yeah, that's totally my kind of gag. Like,
right.
I totally get the big meathead,
yep.
You know, being like, just, okay, let me see how this goes. Go ahead, touch it. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
I just love it. I think it's good stuff. And you know what? The thing is, and I know a lot of people, and I feel like we say this every Marvel episode. We don't want to compare this to DC, right? We really don't. But there's a difference in the way that Marvel approaches the comedy in their films. It's not, it's charm. You know what I mean? It's not forced. It feels, it's very much who these characters are. It is part of their personalities. It is even part of the actors that are bringing them to life. Like Chris Pratt is, you know, has been in comedy for most of his career. You know what I mean? it, but you know, when he's, what is good to see is how he uses that to drive some of his more emotional, his emotional scenes. You know, there's another actor in particular that I think gets a gets the short end of the stick because his career has not been, I'd say his career has been hit or miss, but up until recently it's been amazing, and that's Ryan Reynolds. You know, his comedic timing is like amazing, like spot on, like balls to the wall, like holy shit, I can't believe you do that. But despite his ability to do that, he's an amazing actor. And I've talked about this a lot on Twitter, like Smoking Aces, I think, is one of the most underrated movies to date. And it is that last scene where he's sitting there and he finally realizes that he's lost all of these men, his partner is dead, and it was all for some like covert mission to save a guy who had infiltrated the mob, and he pulls the plug on the father and son thing at the end. That scene is like ridiculous to me. I don't know if anyone else has seen it, but if you want to see the best of Ryan Reynolds, like watch that film, because I just think it's awesome. And there's also a movie he did called Buried, where he plays a construction worker that gets kidnapped in the Middle East and is basically buried alive. And it's really deep.
I was going to say, that doesn't sound at all like a comedy.
Yeah, it's not comedy at all. It's really dark, and it's really good. It's an indie film, and it's the best of Ryan Reynolds, in my opinion. So
how do you feel about RIPD?
Never saw it.
Oh,
I was actually,
I don't think anybody's seen it. That was the problem.
I don't think anyone's seen it. Yeah. Yeah, he had a stretch. I think it was like RIPD.
Yes, he certainly did. Very long
Turbo,
stretch.
Turbo, Green Lantern. I did like The Proposal. I thought The Proposal was cute with Sandra Bullock.
What was it? Was it Just Friends? What was the movie with, was it Reese Witherspoon? No, Amy Smart. It's Amy Smart. The movie where he goes back to like his hometown and...
Yeah.
Yeah. No, didn't do it for you.
Yeah. No, nah, man. I mean, he's kind of struck out more than he's won.
Yes, he has.
And
but he's figured it out now with Deadpool. Anyway.
Well, yeah. Let's see where he goes from there, because some of the other movies he's done off of that have not been off the wall successful either. So. No.
But you know, to talk about the, you know, again, like you said, we don't want to compare DC to Marvel, and it's not really even something that needs to be compared, because, you know, if you look at, forget about the DCEU for a second, because really the only time that they tried to DCU? Go all in on the, or the DCU, whatever, they tried to go all in on the comedy, I thought was been Justice League, which we know that was forced, and we know that was just, we know what that was all about, right? That wasn't anything organic at all. That was just a focused attempt to try and make people laugh and make a movie, you know, as light and goofy as possible. But, yeah, and I mean, Wonder Woman, though, had its organic moments of laughter, because again, it's the fish out of water element, which you know works if you do it well. But going back in the pre DCU or DCEU DC days, I mean, obviously Nolan's Dark Knight trilogy, there was no real room for comedy. I mean, yeah, you're gonna have a couple of moments here or there, but
yeah.
But even in like Donner's Superman, I mean, forget when Richard Lester took it over, because we know what he was, a comedy director. But like even in like the, you know, Superman the movie, you get the, you know, you've got me, who's got you, you know, like that stuff. Yeah. And in, even in Superman 2, you know, I've been working out, you know, all that stuff at the truck stop.
Right. So, yeah. I mean, the comedy is, again, it's intrinsically sort of part of the character.
Yeah.
It doesn't, you know, it's not forced. I mean, that was kind of one of my issues with Suicide Squad above many. You know, there's many, many issues with that film.
I lost track of my issues with that movie.
It's, you know, the comedy, the quips feel forced. It's like, I'm not even going to touch Justice League, because that is, it just is what it is. But I think, you know, even in the Nolan films, there are like these really light lines that kind of come across that are part, again, it's part of the story. It's part of the character. Like I laugh when in The Dark Knight, specifically when, you know, the Joker's goons raid the Harvey Dent party, and Bruce manages to disarm one of the thugs, walks past a couple that's like, you know, basically having sex in his bed. And they're like, oh my God, Bruce, what's going on? Oh, you have a panic room. And he just keeps on walking. Right. He goes and he's like, yeah, screw you guys. And he disappears and gets himself into the bad gear. So there's stuff like that. There's, you know, the slight banter between Bruce and Alfred that I think is awesome.
Sure.
You know, like when he knocks out one of the League of Shadows guys, and he's like, "I hope you're not a member of the Fire Brigade." Like, right. That's cute stuff, yeah, but that's part of that's Alfred. Exactly. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
you know, you did mention before we got on that whole conversation about comedy and superhero films. You did mention Bob Iger and Disney. So last episode we mentioned, you know, the potential ramifications of Disney buying Fox and how it went well beyond just them getting rights to, you know, characters like Fantastic Four and X-Men. And one of the things I spoke about was how, you know, that deal would make Disney a majority shareholder in Hulu. So this week, I guess, at their investors call, right?
Yeah, their earnings call.
Their earnings call, they announced or basically said that Hulu eventually will become the streaming service where they put more of their adult-oriented content on, mm-hmm. and they're going to use their actual Disney streaming service for more of the family-friendly fare, which is really interesting. And, you know, just to give you the numbers, just so you know how it breaks down, when this deal finalizes, Disney will have a 60% stake in Hulu because they had a 30% stake and Fox had a 30% stake. So obviously they'll have 60%. The other 40% is 30%, I believe, is Comcast, and 10% is now AT&T because of the Time Warner acquisition. So that's kind of how Hulu. So Hulu will basically be 60% Disney, 30% Comcast, 10% AT&T. And Warner Media, once this sale gets finalized, assuming there's no other transactions that occur at any point, and that will give Disney that majority. And yeah, so I think that's an interesting thing, and it's something that will definitely kind of shift the landscape a little bit as far as the streaming world goes.
It's you know, it's funny. So a lot of people have talked about, oh, you know, they're going to become a monopoly. You know, there's some apprehension about Disney sort of holding so much in their hands. But, you know, when you think about it, and, you know, you mentioned, you know, the other owners of or shareholders of Hulu, and even the sort of other competitive streaming services that are available at the moment, it doesn't necessarily feel to me like they're going to become this, you know, monopoly conglomerate that's right. just gobbling up everything. What does get me excited about it, though, is and we talked about this in the last episode is, or maybe even two episodes ago, is, you know, sort of finally realizing this cord cutting strategy, right? And giving people access to all the content that they want. Now, obviously, it's going to be through subscriptions, but, you know, when you think about the other assets that was under 21st Century Fox, I think it was ESPN, or
you're talking about for with the acquisition?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they would be getting the regional Fox sports networks, which
there's
they
a
would,
whole bunch yeah. of stuff that's coming with it, like
yeah.
National Geographic. Like, who would have thought, right?
Right.
Like, so now Disney. Is that
you're right? Everything all right over there?
Oh my God, they found me. I don't know how, but I think they found me. Oh, if someone can name the reference of that movie, I will give them a special treat. So anyone who's listening, tweet at me when you heard that alarm, what quote that was from, what movie that was from, and who says it, and I will send you something special. Anyways, so, you know, it's really interesting because there could be some huge implications in terms of the marrying of certain properties that Disney already owns with the new stuff. So, you know, I don't necessarily know how you would marry like a Disney with National Geographic, like a Disney show, or, you know, Star Wars with National Geographic, but the prospect makes me very interested, you know, in terms of hearing what they would do. And just the idea of having two streaming services under a Disney brand gets me very excited, because it means that some of the things that I think people were afraid of in terms of things that would get cut, like rated R content, is not necessarily true.
Right. And that was the other big part of that statement, was adult oriented, you know, whatever that means. But obviously it means that, you know, this isn't all just going to be Pixar and Dumbo and, you know, lighthearted Marvel stuff. And, you know, there is room, and Disney already has a show, or Marvel has a show on Hulu, The Runaways, which I loved. And, you know, so that was already on Hulu. And so there's not, you know, there's a precedent for this. It's not like there's never been any Marvel or Disney content on Hulu before. It's just a way for them to diversify a little bit. And if they are going to move, I guess, stuff off of Netflix eventually, well, now they have their own service and they have Hulu as a kind of a destination spot where they can pick and choose where that they have control over and where they're going to place some of these things. If I think if anything, you know, Netflix is the site that might start to think about, you know, their relationship, because I think the days of, I don't know what the contracts are like, but I think the days of those, you know, Marvel shows being Netflix exclusives are probably going to come to an end sooner than later.
Yeah. So I did read something today that the last piece of Disney content that will be featured on Netflix is Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Okay.
So when that gets released, that will be the official last Disney, you know, Disney Marvel movie that gets released.
You got to figure that's probably going to be sometime first quarter of next year. You would think.
Yeah. So 2019 is the official, is like the sort of official timing. I think it's like spring,
right,
of 2019. So yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens. But it makes me hell of excited, because I'll be honest, I've been thinking and dreaming about, you know, moments for me to, or an opportunity for me to completely cut the cord. And it sounds like I'm getting very close.
Yeah, I mean, I've already been on my way to doing that for a couple of years, like I talked about in the last episode. So all of this stuff gets me really excited. But speaking of things that tie into this conversation and will get you very excited, from the Disney streaming service, the actual Disney service side of it, they did announce that this Star Wars show, the Jon Favreau one, that's going to be on the Disney streaming service, is going to be a like mega budget show. And this is, again, thing that I was talking about, where, well, when I was talking about CBS All Access and Star Trek, which also had some big news this week with the announcement of the Jean-Luc Picard show that they're going to have, and that they basically want to just have all Star Trek all the time with original content. You know, these streaming services will allow these companies to dump large sums of money into the budgets for these shows and not have to worry about, well, the network that's airing it, it feels like it's too expensive and they're not getting the ad revenue, so they're going to have to cancel it. So they estimated that they're going to spend like $100 million over the 10 episodes that Star Wars show is going to run, which is just under like Game of Thrones level budget, and probably slightly ahead or right around what Star Trek Discovery cost. And if that's the case, I don't know how anybody can't be excited about that, because I thought Star Trek Discovery looked amazing and had a cinematic scope to it. So if this Star Wars show is even bigger than that, man, we are in.
Am like so freaking excited about this. It's like not even funny. Three reasons, right? The budget, that's a big deal for me, because my biggest fear way back when, before Disney purchased Lucasfilm, George Lucas talked about doing live action Star Wars films, and I was like, man, it's gonna be on sci-fi, it's gonna look like crap, like not really interested. So the budget thing is awesome, you know, short and sweet, 10 episodes, perfect. Jon Favreau, amazing director, great storyteller, so super interested to see, you know, what he does. And he's got already not only great ties with Disney, but amazing ties with Star Wars, having voiced some characters or a character on the Clone Wars. And the third reason, this is the biggest reason of all, is that it's a story about the Mandalorians, which is amazing to me. I freaking love the Mandalorians. And I know people are like, dude, what is he talking about? Why get Star Wars and all? So Mandalorians, so essentially, is the armor that Boba Fett wears. So it's a whole planet called Mandalore of basically bounty hunter, assassin type warrior people. So excited is to hear and see, you know, anything that comes out about that. The timing that the show is going to be set is going to be after Return of the Jedi. So Luke Skywalker's around. There are some other characters that have been introduced in Star Wars Rebels that are going to be around. You know, so there's there's lots of stuff that they can play with, and it's Star Wars, so bring it on! I'm so excited, man! Like, happy dance! Like, it's gonna be great.
Yes,
so.
It is, and it's just the beginning. I mean, that's not gonna be obviously we know Clone Wars is coming back for that service too. So, I mean, there's exciting stuff on the horizon. These streaming services are coming out swinging with some, you know, really cool original content. And who knows what's going to find its way on Hulu from the Disney library. But
yeah, you know, I'd imagine that a lot of the 21st Century Fox stuff is going to live there.
Yeah, I would think so.
You know what I mean? Because you think about the movies that, I mean, the Alien franchise is 20th Century Fox.
Right.
So Disney now owns the Alien franchise.
Yeah, yes, they imagine that.
Think about that for a second.
Yeah.
So, or will own it because it's not a done deal. But yeah, I mean, all that kind of content is going to live there probably. So we'll see.
Yeah. See? So that was the other thing. Now, turning over quickly to, I guess, to the DC side of things, there was some stuff going on. The rumor, I guess, it's still just a rumor, right? That a Supergirl movie. Or is that more than a rumor now that the Supergirl movie is in development? I hate these in development stories because we never know whether they're going to happen or not.
I can't keep up. I really can't. It's in development until it's not, and what I mean that could be good or bad, whatever. So I mean that Joker movie with Joaquin Phoenix, I just read is scheduled to start filming in September in New York City. So like next month, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's like next month. Who the hell knew that? Really? So I don't know. I have no words. I don't know.
Yeah, but
Supergirl.
Yeah, it is. I mean, and you know, we have the Supergirl show already. Neither of us are huge fans of it. At least not now. Anyway, I was when it first came on. I liked it, but
same.
Yeah, but so we'll see. I mean, but the key is, though, a lot of these projects that you're hearing from DC are, you know, female-driven projects, which is, it's exciting and it's cool. And some of them are, I like this Birds of Prey movie, which when they first announced it, I was like, all right, you know, kind of ho-hum about it. But I like a lot of, you know, the things I'm hearing, at least coming out of this thing. You know, I love the Cassandra Cain character. So I love that that's going to be a focal point of the movie. Mm. And I think that there's, you know, there's a lot of potential with all of this stuff. It's always going to all come down to the execution, but you know, we'll see what happens.
Yeah. We'll see. You know, we'll see. I'm tempering any optimism. If I even have it, I'm excited though that, yeah, that, I mean, they obviously have struck gold with Wonder Woman and, are looking to replicate that with some of their other female superheroes, which is great. You know, that is really good. We'll see what happens in terms of it actually coming to fruition. I'd say 60% optimistic that it will. Supergirl, you know what I mean? Like that's quite a big deal, and they get to kind of craft a bit more of the universe around Superman if and when, you know, Cavill's contracts are signed and sealed. But it was something alluded to in you know, the Man of Steel movie. If folks remember, there was like that empty pod.
Yeah, although, you know, I think there was a thing that came out that Zack Snyder said that that wasn't the actual intention of that. Which I mean, I guess you could say anything you want now, but
sure.
Yeah, but that's what he was saying.
And the Robin that was killed was Dick Grayson.
Yes.
Great job.
That's what they say.
You know, my take on Birds of Prey, sure, let's see how it goes. I'm more interested in the stuff that they've got going on the TV front.
Yes.
You know, with The Flash and Arrow, and they just recently cast Batwoman.
Yes, they
so,
did.
You know, that's exciting news, too.
Ruby
right?
Rose, so, right?
Mm-hmm.
She is going to be Batwoman. I am so excited for Batwoman. I think I've said this before on the podcast. When they did the Rebirth line at DC, her character became one of my favorite characters in, like, all of the comics. The stuff from Detective Comics and then from her own title. I love that character now. And it's not a character that I ever, you know, necessarily, not that I wasn't a fan, but, like, it never really moved the needle for me much. But now, like, I'm actually, the Batwoman show, which, you know, looks like it's actually going to happen, aside from her popping up, you know, in the crossover episodes. That's one of the things I'm looking forward to the most in the next couple of years, like, or the next year. I'm very excited for that, and I think they're going to knock that out of the park. I just hope that they don't wind up going the using the typical, like, Berlanti formula where they wind up making it, like, another team show. I'd like them to just focus a little bit on just some individual characters for once.
Yeah.
But
I mean, that was kind of my what caused me to pause on Black Lightning, which I haven't really gotten into, was it fell out of being a, you know, solo character, like, yeah, solo centric story, because everyone needs an Alfred, you know what I mean? So they've got, but he's a tailor or something, I don't know, like a dry cleaner, I don't know what the hell the guy's name is.
Well, you know what I think we should do? We should have Vanessa come on the show next week and read us the bio for that character.
Oh, I'm so excited. Oh man, we'll pump her up full of coffee and she'll just go on. And I doubt though it will be as interesting as getting bitten by raccoons and having three concussions and trying to deface some family's tombstone.
I think that somehow the trailer for Birds of Prey should be her giving the history of Black Mask. That should be the whole trailer for that movie.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. The other thing is, and I just want to call this out because I know that it's a big deal for Batwoman because she's you know, a member of the LGBTQ community, and folks are like, oh, you know, finally they brought on a lesbian superhero, but there have been plenty.
Yeah. Well. I mean, I was going to say,
you know what I mean? Like White Canary.
Although technically
she's bisexual.
I guess. I mean, I don't know, you know, but you're right. I mean, I think that, it's positive regardless, right? Positive role models. That's the whole point of superheroes, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. So, you know, I'm glad that we're getting lots of that representation in, you know, the shows and in the films and all that. So I'm sure it's going to be a good show, at least one season.
Yeah.
We'll see how it goes. We'll see how long it lasts. But yeah, it's interesting. It's I know, to be honest, I know nothing of Batwoman.
Well, you should. I would recommend reading. Go back to the DC Rebirth, the Detective Comics stuff.
Yeah.
Just start with that.
I mean, do I need to? Should I just call Vanessa?
You could do that as well. But the Detective Comics Rebirth run was so amazing. You should check it out. Get volumes 1, 2, and 3. They're collected now of Rebirth DC, of Rebirth Detective Comics. And I think you'll fall in love with the character. And she did get her own title, which I think is now done, but that was really good too. But definitely, I think it's some of the best Batman family, for lack of a better term, books. I've never been a huge fan of, like, the Batman family stuff, but that run in Detective Comics was really, really good. I think it's some of the best Bat family stories that they've told. The other being Batman and Robin Eternal, which was a run that Scott Snyder did in the New 52. But yeah, you should definitely check that out. Or just Vanessa go through the backstory for you.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's about that time.
Yeah, it is.
So, is there anything else before we get out of here?
No, not that I can think of. I mean, I know, you know, we're in sort of getting closer to the middle of August, and that brings us closer to New York Comic Con, which will be our first sort of, I guess, in-person appearance at a major con. So we're really excited about that. Lots of chatter happening behind the scenes, so we can bring you guys some awesome stuff. If you're in the New York City area, I mean, tickets are kind of hard to get now, but if you know a friend who knows a friend and, you know, can shake some awesome deal out for you, please try to get tickets so we can link up. But more details on that will be coming.
Yeah, we'll be there. Well, we'll both be there one day, and you'll be there an additional day.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
we're going to have some shirts somewhere. If not inside, we'll have them around outside. We're gonna have some shirts, we're gonna have some, you know, stuff to give away, and we looks like we do have a way of recording some content there, so there will be some content being recorded at Comic-Con.
Yeah, it's super exciting, so you know, be on the lookout for that. And yeah, I think obviously let's move into the plugs. So if you guys haven't heard, we do have a store, and you can get some really cool merchandise. I literally rock a shirt every day on my way from the gym. A couple of people actually have pointed me out on the street, going, "Oh man, that's what's TFG?" And then I hand them a sticker, and I'm like, "Listen to the Fanboy Garage." But you know, if you guys are looking for throw pillows, not coasters, t-shirts.
No, not coasters. Definitely throw pillows. You never have enough throw pillows.
Yeah, you know. Definitely check out the site. You know, if you're a big purchaser of things on Amazon, like most of us are, please feel free to use our site as a portal to the Amazon.
Tell that truck to back up a little bit later.
So I was, while we were recording, I was texting my wife, and I'm like, "Hey, what's going on?" You know, because I did notice that the lights were flashing like near my house. So apparently they're waiting for me outside.
Okay.
They brought out
the big truck for you, apparently.
You know, I've got the release the Snyder Cut people outside waiting for me.
Uh-oh. Oh, look, I think they heard us. Perfect.
Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyways, get your gear. I forgot where else I was saying. But yeah, okay.
Yeah, just throw pillows and all that stuff. Yeah, you can definitely get your gear. And of course, don't forget, you know, you have a week from the time you're listening to this. Well, assuming you're listening to this on the first day, to get in on that contest. And if you do purchase something from the merch store, you'll get additional entries to, you know, maybe win both digital copies.
It could be a freaking sticker. Get a sticker. Give it to your kids. Put it on your bike, on your bumper, whatever. Dude, get something.
Yeah.
And like I said, high quality stuff too. Like
definitely is. It definitely is high quality stuff. You can also follow me on Twitter. That is high quality stuff as well, at RealCLMighty.
And you can check me out on Twitter as well at StartingSith. And always, please go to thefanboygarage.com, where you could listen to previous episodes, have, again, opportunities to buy plenty of merchandise. You can listen, you know, you can link to the Amazon affiliate site. So, again, make your purchases there. And yeah, you can leave us an email, drop us a comment. You know, certainly leave those 5-star reviews. We love you as much as you love us. So spread the word, too.
Yep, and don't forget to follow and interact with us at the Fanboy Garage on Twitter as well.
Yes.
So that's it for this episode. We will we'll talk to you next time.
All righty. Later, y'all.